skies of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
All right, boys. We got a busy day here. We've got a busy weekend. Vikings training camp going on. Twins trade deadline counting down. So we'll have stuff on that. It's Action Movie Rewind Friday. We're heading toward the NBA league year early next week. I believe Sunday, I think it's August 2nd, Monday. But let's start here, boys. Mackie and Judd, daily Minnesota sports entertainment, and we want titles. Everything we talk about is through the prism of titles here on the show.
Okay? Can we pull that back a little bit?
Titles.
With the Wolves?
No, I want titles.
Well, you want a title. I'm just saying when it comes to the Twins, the Vikings, and the Wild. But when it comes to the Wolves, I'll just take that playing game.
Okay. All right. So we want titles for all the other teams. For the Wolves, we just want the 10 seed. We just want the 10 seed, baby. Yes. That's right. So let's do a few minutes here on the trade that was made last night. I think Judd hit a write that down prediction here. You said very early on when Rubio was traded for last year, you said this will be his only year. He'll be here for 1 year, even though it's a 2-year contract. So he was traded to Cleveland last night for Torian Prince, who, by the way, Torian Prince, a second-round pick and some cash. We'll get into sort of the inner makings here. But if you guys remember, Torian Prince played at Baylor.
Yep.
And I think, was it Baylor got upset by Yale or something in the NCAA tournament? Mm-hmm. And he was the guy that was asked, some angry reporter was like, how could you guys get out-rebounded by Yale? You got out-rebounded by Yale. What is that? This is an outrage. Yale, right? And Torian Prince said, well, how could they out-rebound you? Well, they reached up and they grabbed the ball off the rim. And they secured it, and that's a rebound. And they did that more than we did.
I love it.
So if we get that Torian Prince in post game, like will the Wolves get thrashed by the Memphis Grizzlies?
Who's gonna
or
be
something,
outraged like, though? Like what? Who's the outraged reporter at this point?
You know what? Britt Robson will get a little cantankerous.
Okay, most of them are like, okay, you lost again. That's cool.
Yeah, I know Britt will sometimes get mad, like, what do you guys, I've been watching this for 30 years, what are you guys doing?
He'll break it down, too, though. That's very true.
Yep. So they make the trade. John Hollinger from The Athletic, and Dane Moore, our friend, did a great job explaining some of this stuff, too. I'm just reading this from The Athletic. Why this is a good trade for the Timberwolves. It's not a blockbuster. It's not going to change the franchise, but why it's a good trade on a couple different fronts. So the Wolves go from 4.7 below the luxury tax line to 9.5 million below the luxury tax line, enough that it opens them up to potentially use their entire taxpayer mid-level exception, which means, so when you're over the cap, like the Wolves are, the only way for you to bring a free agent in is through what the league calls the mid-level exception. If you're too close to the luxury tax, you only get like $5 million to spend on a player. If you clear some room and give yourself some breathing room between where you're at and the luxury tax ceiling, you can spend about $10 million per year on a place. You can get a better player with the full mid-level exception in free agency. You could sign a guy to like a 4-year, $40 million contract now, which is, you know, you could get someone legitimate. And as Hollinger writes, it could open up signing 2020 first-rounder Leandro Bolmaro, who might come over this year, and be a factor. So they, and by the way, like to replace Rubio, you know, Jordan McLaughlin could become, you know, a varsity roster player, so to speak. So there's ways you can replace Rubio, but they open up a chance to use the full mid-level exception by clearing some salary cap space. And by the way, Torian Prince, he shoots threes at a 40% clip. He's a little bit undersized to play the four, but like you can put him out there as kind of a, you know, a big wing player or a small sort of undersized four. Defense is very optional for Torian Prince, but I like this trade. John Hollinger likes the trade. What do you guys think of the Ricky Rubio era coming to an end here in Minnesota?
I think that it was probably a good plan by Gerson and at the time Ryan Saunders to bring Rubio back last November. I believe, in fact, I believe they acquired him on what was the draft night in November of 2020, and then they traded him on draft night 2021. I think the intention was good. I get why they did it. Obviously, Ricky and Ryan are very close. But we saw enough, in my opinion, of Ricky last year where he needed to go. Like, it just wasn't going to work. I don't think he was necessarily going to fit into what Chris Finch does offensively. And Chris Finch has a very good idea, because of his background, what he wants to do offensively. I appreciate his defense, but clearing up more cap room to me is the absolute key here. Like, I think this is going to trigger more moves now. So I don't believe we're talking about the player in Prince that they got back as, okay, is this guy going to contribute and how good is he going to be? And is this a great trade? I think that this goes to what you said, Phil, which is the explanation of what this does for you now to make subsequent moves, because you freed up the cash. Mm-hmm. So forget the player that they got back. I actually think that this goes way more to the fact that they freed up more moves to be made now, of which I think that they will make more.
And that's the thing, right? Like, this can't be, all right, so, and Prince is an expiring contract. You could, in theory, you could just spin Prince, because Prince as an expiring $13 million chunk,
yes,
is valuable. Those contracts are valuable for teams looking to clear cap space for next summer. So he could be a trade chip. There's so many things that could happen. But like I said, if this is the move, and maybe there's like another minor move, you're still very much on the fringe of the play-in next year. If you can somehow take pieces, future draft picks, whatever it may be, and spin those things, because now you can trade a first-round pick again, now that we're past the draft. You can't trade back-to-back future first-round picks. You have to have at least a first-round pick within the next 2 years. So you can. So now that we're past the draft, you can officially trade your 2022 first-round pick. What's the next thing is the question. Is it a Ben Simmons? I mean, that asking price right now, I'm not giving up four future first, three pick swaps, and a player for Ben Simmons right now. Just not. And by the way, that's the thing. Like, to make it work for Ben Simmons, you have to give up players, because his contract is like $30, $35 million a year. So right now, the Sixers are asking for four first-round picks, and from the Wolves' perspective, like a Malik Beasley and another player, like just to make the money work. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting move last night. Hopefully it's just sort of the first turning of the wheels over the next week for the Wolves to do something splashier.
Yeah, so in the Zoom call that he did last night after, of course, not having a draft pick, Gerson talked about the move and talked about the fact that this was a step in getting bigger and better on defense, which, as you pointed out with Prince, doesn't really do it. So I think what we're going to see is the next move is going to be to continue to try to get bigger and more defense, which could mean Prince is gone too. Again, I don't think the move is what's important here, and the money, the player's not. So I don't know that the next move is going to like knock our socks off. Oh my God, it's Simmons or a perceived potential star player. But I do think it's going to go to getting way more what they need as far as defense goes. And you know what? Keep in mind, too, this is going to be the first time that Chris Finch can sort of craft the roster a little bit himself to be what he wants, and to be offensively what he wants as well. So these moves to me now are going to be far more hand-in-hand, like the Vikings moves are, between head coach and president of basketball operations in this case, mm-hmm. to get you to a place where when you start training camp, you're far more comfortable with what you have from a personnel standpoint, that they can execute what you want if you're Chris Finch.
Yeah. Yeah, the offseason, the work that Chris Finch did on the fly last year was very impressive and transformational in some ways. I don't want to go too far because they were still the Wolves.
Brett Auerbach, John Wooden, combination of these guys, and Phil Jackson in his prime.
But it will be interesting to see, you know, and there's already some offseason bonding, like they had the team together at a Twins game, and Anthony Edwards was doing backflips off a boat, so we're doing the chemistry thing this offseason, which is great.
What? I didn't see that. What?
I know you're going to get nervous that he's going to, he was on Lake Minnetonka doing backflips off a boat. Into the water, nothing dangerous.
Judge writing a column tonight.
Declan's not necessarily wrong. Wait a second. He was doing backflips off a boat on Lake Minnetonka.
It's fine.
Why is it fine?
It's fine. There's no one else around.
Yeah.
This is reminding me
that can go wrong in the water.
Somebody dug up a tweet and a take from Judd that was like 5 or 6 years old this morning.
On Rizzo.
Anthony Rizzo getting traded last night, and Judd got so mad when Anthony Rizzo stood up on the tarp at Wrigley to catch a foul ball.
No, on the wall. The tarp I was okay with.
The tarp's fine.
He was on the wall. You can slip off that wall. You are screwed. And I do not want my star player. You know what? Send the 12th guy on the bench. He can do backflips on Lake Minnetonka.
Jake Layman, you're the other stuntman. Come on in here, buddy.
Do all the backflips you want, Jake.
Let's see a Misty. Come on, Jake Layman.
Jalen Noel, you're the stunt double here. All right. Whenever we're doing ass shots or backflips off of the boat, we need you to be a stand-in.
Backflip
here.
Gainer. Let's go. Come on, Jake Layman.
I got to go find this. This makes it now. My day's ruined.
There was one interview. I mean, the big thing in the NBA yesterday, obviously, Russell Westbrook getting traded. He's going to be like 33, I want to say. And he did average a triple double last year, but he's not quite he's never been the most efficient player. But the deeper analytical dives will tell you that he's not nearly the same player he was. But anyways, so he gets traded from Washington to the Lakers. And your first thought was, oh, this is good news for teams like the Timberwolves that would love to leverage Bradley Beal as the Wizards as a third team that you can dump your rebuilding assets onto draft picks to then get a Ben Simmons or somebody. Well, there's a report last night that Bradley Beal has decided to not request a trade from the Wizards. Mm-hmm. And in a roundabout way, I think that impacts the Timberwolves because if they want to acquire Ben Simmons, they need a third team. There's really... I don't see the Wolves offering up D'Angelo Russell or Cat or Anthony Edwards in a trade directly with the 76ers. They would need to send assets, draft picks, a Malik Beasley, you know, maybe a Jaden McDaniels, as much as that would suck. Like, can you send assets to a team looking to rebuild and then a wing player or a shooting guard like Bradley Beal goes to the Sixers and then Ben Simmons comes to the Timberwolves? Like, that made sense. But if Bradley Beal has decided, for whatever reason, for his Stockholm syndrome that he's been suffering in Washington, D.C.,
love Washington,
that he's not going to request a trade, then that avenue would be dead for the Timberwolves. So something worth noting.
Yeah, that's going to be – so from what Doogie told us, if the Sixers' asking price for Simmons remains what he said – I believe he was talking about that trade potentially in relation to the Spurs, Phil. I got to think that's going to be a no-go here. Like, if you can get a third team in too, but didn't you tell me a couple days ago that Toronto was basically just bypassed a third team and said, well, we'll trade for him, but let's just do the deal between us and you. So I don't think they're going to get Simmons, but I do think that they're going to make some substantial moves that, again, aren't going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe that they made that move, but are going to strengthen this team.
And like the Pacers, like Miles Turner, we don't know what the Pacers are thinking. Do they think they can contend in the East?
Right.
Are they going to go into kind of a rebuild? Would they just spin pieces? We don't know yet, but we will. We will know in the next four days or so.
Backflip off a pontoon. I'm watching it right now. I'm a little bit more at ease here after seeing it because it's a pontoon.
It's a pontoon.
So we're
it's
not
the minivan of the boats.
Yeah, and you can actually launch yourself pretty safely off the pontoon.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm not gonna lie though. I don't love it.
Okay.
Next contract. No lakes.
I will say, watching that draft last night, I watched the majority of it. Cade Cunningham looks like an absolute stud, and that dude is so well spoken. Like, I'm very excited to watch him in the league. Like, he looks just like an absolute star.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying he might be, in terms of just being 6'8", and he's just big and can do everything, that he might be the most surefire prospect since LeBron James.
Yeah. Dex, are you inching towards being a Pistons guy?
Bad boys, yeah. I'm down for the bad boys.
Throwback,
yeah, absolutely.
Mahorn,
I was a big Chauncey. I was a big Chauncey Billups fan in my youth. So yeah,
everyone needs a backup. If you're a Wolves guy, you need a backup team because usually by like February, it's time to start thinking about the draft for the Timberwolves. So who's your backup team? Maybe the Pistons.
It's been a long time since the Pistons have been anyone's backup team before Declan was born.
Need some of that insurance, man. Need some of that insurance. Never know.
What do you mean? You're saying the Pistons haven't been relevant? The Pistons won a championship?
They have won a championship for the Wolves, so we shouldn't rag them too much. But they have, what, one winning season in the last 12 years? No playoff wins in that time? I mean, they have been a dump. But I will take them.
The championship team, though, that they had, Phil, the last one, was a really boring team to watch.
I don't know. I thought, Ben Wallace blocking shots. Yeah. Rip Hamilton Prince, with the face mask for no reason.
Yeah. The NBA back then, at that point, not all that exciting. Let's be honest about it.
It was a down period. The Wolves definitely missed their window there.
The Meadows at Mystic Lake has modified its golf policies to follow the COVID-19 public health recommendations and welcomes you to play this award-winning public golf course. It offers a unique, challenging, and scenic golf experience. The Meadows at Mystic Lake is a full-service golfing destination, enhanced by nearby food and entertainment, including the Meadows Bar and Grill and Mystic Lake Casino Hotel. It's never too early to book a tee time or shop the pro shop. Stop in or visit golfthemeadows.com. That's golfthemeadows.com. Owned and operated by Shakopee Midwakanton Sioux Community.
Let's get into it. The main event on this Friday. I'll let Dex fire this, but action movie rewind.
Ever heard of Eddie Kim?
Who hasn't? Oh, I was watching one of those crime shows once, you know, with the hokey reenactments, where he tortured this guy who was a witness against him by gouging out his eyes and then feeding him to some pigs. Pretty gruesome stuff.
Yeah. He doesn't mess around, that guy.
So, what do you have to...
I'm a witness for the prosecution.
Wow. That is so hot.
Welcome to the party, pal!
Action Movie Reviews with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
Get to the chopper!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
It's my job to handle life and death situations on a daily basis. It's what I do, and I'm very good at it. Now, you can stand there and be the panicked, angry mob and blame him, me, and the government for getting you into this. But if you want to survive tonight, you need to save your energy and start working together. Now, what we need to do is go back in there and find all the dead snakes we can so the doctors on the ground will know what kind of anti-venoms we need. Whatever you find, you bring it to me. And I don't need to tell you to be careful.
We gotta clear the snakes out of the cockpit.
Yeah, clear the snakes out of the cockpit, yeah.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane! Everybody strap in! I'm about to open some windows.
Wow. Oh, God. I love it.
Wow. Oh, wow. My God. All right. Action Movie Rewind here, part of the Mackie and Judd movie review franchise. Every Friday going back to March 2020, right when the pandemic hit. We've been reviewing movies, action movies, rom-coms, sports movies. Maybe we'll branch out even more at some point. But today we have landed on Snakes on a Plane, 2006. I would say a generational cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into more of that. Early days, fairly early days of internet and things going viral.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the summary, presented by Federated. And I'm going to guess that a lot of people and entities in this movie could use some insurance. Federated's here to help with risk management. You know, if you ever have an infestation of snakes, I don't know, maybe Federated has some guidance and advice for you. Not sure how that works, but they've been around for over 100 years, based in Owatonna, and they allow business owners to sleep better at night with the people, the policies, and the resources that they provide. Find out more at federatedinsurance.com, and remember, at Federated, it's our business to protect yours. Here's the summary of Snakes on a Plane. FBI agent Nellville Flynn, played by Samuel L. Jackson, boards a flight from Hawaii to Los Angeles, escorting a witness to trial. An onboard assassin releases a crate of deadly serpents in an attempt to kill the witness. Flynn and a host of frightened passengers and the crew must band together to survive the slithery threat. 69% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
The Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus says, quote, Snakes on a Plane lives up to its title, featuring snakes on a plane. It isn't perfect, but then again, it doesn't need to be. $33 million budget. Oh, my God. There was like one set. They're on a plane.
Samuel L.
$33 million budget turned into $62 million at the box office. Samuel L. Jackson, Juliana Margulies, Kenan Thompson, and a bunch of other sort of fringe recognizable actors from that era.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by David R. Ellis. Can you guys guess what David R. Ellis is famous for? One of the great 90s sequels.
Don't know.
Homeward Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco. He also directed.
Okay.
Jed, have you ever seen that?
Dude, Homeward Bound. Oh my God, those are tearjerkers, man. We should review Homeward. No, we should.
I don't want to do tearjerker rewind. I do not want to do tearjerking rewind.
What's next then? Toy Story 3, so I can just heave cry again. Stop it.
I'm going to put it down on our list. Homeward Bound. We will find a genre that includes Homeward Bound. Kids movies. Let's review kids movies.
I'm drawing the line. I do not want to do kids movies.
At some point, we're going to run out of action movies. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and then we'll go back to more rom-coms because there has to be something better than Mr. Baseball. We've got a lot of sports films too, by the way.
We do. We definitely do. All right, we'll start with Judd here. What was your main takeaway from Snakes on a Plane?
My main takeaway from this film, and there's a lot to take away from this film. This was a great one to do this project for. But anyway, my main takeaway was Samuel L. Jackson got paid clearly, and good for him. this is a fantastic. And so here's the thing that's sort of genius in his part in taking this role. You don't know what's going to become like just a flop of a film like this, as opposed to a cult classic. So like, it's hard to tell. And the fact he took this film, and the fact that this film is, you know, while very gross at times, is also hysterically funny at times. This is a great film where I don't know what his side projects were, because he's a great actor, but he must have had some projects where he either just wanted to do them and wasn't going to get paid a lot, or I don't know if he was doing theater or what, but the man cashed in, and that's my takeaway. Good for you. And he's great. But my point is, like, this is so below his potential pay grade, because like he could be in action films that are just great action films, and to take Snakes on a Plane, gotta love it.
I'm trying to find what he made for this movie, and
me too.
Nothing is.
Yeah, I googled it as well.
Well, he and Juliana Margulies had to make a decent amount of the budget that you talked about, right?
Yeah, but Juliana,
besides the special effects,
she was. I mean, I know she was still prominent in ER at the time, but like Good Wife came out like 6-7 years ago. Like, my mom was super into that show. Like, she didn't really, I think, hit her stride till like 5 or 6 years later after this.
Dude,
I mean, she was established.
ER got you paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her and Clooney were big time stars.
Yeah. She was on, I mean, those big cast members on ER were making probably millions per season, I would assume, right?
I guarantee you, for that role, she got paid. But anyway, Samuel L., it was a treat to watch you. And I give him credit too, you guys. There's a lot of actors that could have done this film that would not have made this film nearly as much fun, and it wouldn't have been nearly as good. So that's my takeaway.
I think, just to piggyback, I'll give you my takeaway in a second, but it almost felt like, all right, what's the most outrageous plot we can put Samuel L. Jackson in? You know, what if it's just him? You know, it's like they went through a different iterations of, what if there's like a bomb on a plane? Oh, yeah, well, that's kind of been done before. What if the plane is like malfunctioning and they have to land it? Oh, that would be good too. No. What if we put snakes on the plane? Oh, my God, right? I think my main takeaway is that sometimes it's hard to name movies. You know, we see throughout this exercise of these Friday movie reviews, we see a lot of this is what the original film was called, and then they changed it to this. It's like, it's hard to name things.
Oh, I see.
It's hard to name brands. It's hard to name movies. My main takeaway is this is the most perfectly succinctly named movie in cinematic history.
Yeah.
This movie is like, there's no
Gone with the Wind.
Ambiguity about, well, no, Gone with the Wind is not, you know, you wouldn't know Gone with the Wind is about Civil War in the old South, which, I mean, the movie title tells you exactly what you're going to get for an hour and a half. With no ambiguity, you're going to get snakes on a plane. The only thing that would have made it even more accurate is if it was snakes on a mother bleeping plane, which wouldn't have been as marketable.
And go to your notes too. It's great that they tried to change the name.
Yep.
And Samuel L. Jackson's like, you ain't changing the name of the film.
Yep. It's hilarious. All right, Dex, what was your main takeaway?
This is the perfect movie of what we need to do every week. Just a ridiculous, over the top, poor acting, poor lines.
What are you poor acting? Keenan Thompson was amazing in this movie.
Yeah, Keenan Thompson. I'll get there. But there's absurd deaths. There's a little bit of like risque and nudity involved. There's actually a lot, kind of a significant amount of nudity involved. It hits everything we need in our action movie review. It is over the top and ridiculous. It's been probably, I didn't see this in theaters, but I saw it shortly after it came to like DVD video, and my friends and I watched it like four times in a summer. And I don't think I have watched it since, so it's been probably like 15 years since I've actually seen it. But it's still absolutely absurd. It is. I'm so glad we were able to review this movie. I'm so happy.
All right, let's go to the next one here. Joe, what was your favorite part about Snakes on a Plane?
Oh, this one's simple. The special effects and the different ways that they tried to come up with for snakes to kill the people on the plane, I thought was fantastic. And I love how I think the last big death on the plane was the obnoxious guy who you kept waiting for him to die.
Oh yeah.
Who throws the dog to that massive snake and gets
you knew that dog was
right.
You
weren't gonna
make
it. But what I loved is the guy that fed the snake the dog was obnoxious, and you knew that he was going to die eventually. You just didn't know how. And seconds after he basically kills the dog, He gets
eaten,
constricted.
Yeah,
the snake wraps him up and then puts the snake head on his head and starts to eat him. Okay, if you didn't enjoy the special effects of this film, and then when they would show the passengers who had been dead for quite some time and they were like foaming in their mouth or there was stuff coming from their eyes,
bravo special effects,
which probably behind the two top paid actors. Was the rest of the budget basically? That's my guess.
I need a budget breakdown of this movie. Like, how much did Juliana cost? How much did Samuel cost? And then how much did the special effects cost? And then how much did it cost just to like? Because there's a production note. They actually used a bunch of real snakes in this movie. You know, how much does it cost per? I'm sure those Hollywood snakes have agents who might also be snakes.
Well, I was going to say, you got a lot of snakes. Oh, boy.
Let's go back to Dex here, your favorite part of this movie.
Couple of things. There's so many things. Number one, I love Kenan Thompson in this movie. And he really doesn't really come into his own till like the last scene of the movie, which I absolutely love when he's in the cockpit.
All right, what's up, y'all? What it is? This is your new pilot, Troy, speaking. And sitting next to me is my main man, my brother from another mother. The biggest pimp that I know, Superfly Agent Flynn, ladies and gentlemen, Agent Flynn.
Sir, have you got any experience piloting a jet aircraft?
Oh, yeah. F-15s, F-16s, A-10 Warthogs, I've flown all that.
Then we're all thankful to have you, sir. What squadron are you with?
The Awesome Fighting Aces. Man, I'm telling you, the video gamers got their locked down tight.
Sir, are you telling me that your only real flight time is at the controls of a video game?
See, it's not a video game, all right? It's a flight simulator.
That PlayStation or Xbox?
PlayStation 2.
He is awesome in this. A few other things. Just how obnoxious some of these deaths are. So, like Judd's saying, the snakes that are just killing them in every possible way. The couple that, and I love how they follow like the classic horror film rules. Like the first couple that gets it on dies right away. That's like rule number one of a horror film. And then when they're also trying to just get up to like that first class level to get away from the planes, and just how many people fall from that stairwell and like get impaled in the most absurd ways. Like there was one guy that got shot through the neck. There was a few other people that got just like absolutely just killed just from the fall of that. I thought that was hilarious. And then the last part, and I shouldn't have laughed at this, but it literally made me buckle over. When the old flight attendant dies, okay, so like the old flight, they're all sad. And they just take her flight attendant coat and put it over her as if like that's a proper burial. I was literally in tears. Yeah. I was in tears laughing so hard. And it's supposed to be a sentimental part because then Julianne is like breaking down. But I could not handle it. It was unreal. I loved all those parts.
Just on the back to Kenan Thompson landing this plane. Just, hey, I've done a flight simulator on a PlayStation 2. I can totally land this plane. If that's the case, if random people can just hop into a cockpit of a plane that large, a commercial plane, and just land it with very little problem during a huge crisis. What does that say? Are we overvaluing the skill set of pilots? Did this movie shine a light on, you know, maybe these pilots aren't quite as skillful as we think if Kenan Thompson can play PlayStation 2 and land it during a crisis?
I'm not buying that you could land that plane, so I don't think so. I think they were trying to make it a little bit simplistic. But it is great to Dex's point, how the end turns into just a complete comedy bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like, we've had all these ridiculously tragic and horrible deaths, and like, all right, we're going to goof around in the cockpit here now. There's about 150 dead bodies back here.
The pimp.
Hey, everybody.
To my right.
All right, I think my favorite part was just the general leadership that Samuel L. Jackson showed throughout this movie, all right? It's an unprecedented, you know, tragic crisis happening on a plane. You're trying to find solutions to it. And you're trying to protect people. I don't know if many people would have shown that same level of leadership. Do you guys ever think to yourselves, this might get a little dark for a second, but whenever I'm on a plane, I always briefly think to myself a couple things, like where's the bathroom in case my stomach starts
to rumble. You don't want to use because you're afraid to use a bathroom on a plane, which we know.
Okay, where, just in case something goes haywire, where are the exits and where everything, right? And then I think, if something really goes haywire, am I going to be one of the people to step up and try and do something about it or help people? And in my mind, the answer is always yes. Like, yeah, hell yeah. Let's do it. Whatever it is. Like, I don't want to go too far down that path, but like, yep, I'm going to be the one in my mind. And I know that in reality, like, the minute I see a snake or some other thing, like I'm probably going to curl into the fetal position. Would you guys be more like Samuel Jackson, where something's going down on this plane right now and someone needs to be a leader and save some lives and do some things? Like, are you Samuel L. Jackson or are you fetal position?
I'm not getting near to trying to lead people. Are you kidding? This is America. No one's going to listen anyway. No, I'm saving my own ass.
Judd would like lead the people, just like, hey, you know what, everyone, just accept this. Just everyone accept it. Like, we're all going to die.
Everyone,
like, Judd would be the accepting acceptance. Of acceptance. Just like,
no, I don't think I'd be that calm. I wish I was that calm, but I would definitely not try and lead.
You'd be freaking everyone out is what you're saying.
I'm the guy who sits in the exit row, and when they come and brief you, you know, read the pamphlet. Are you willing to do this? And you've got to say yes. I'm the guy.
Really, you're like, no, dude. There's no.
I'm the guy who thinks you guys are all out of my right. We'll do it.
Yeah. I'm here for the legroom, and y'all are screwed.
Say I'll do it because you have to, or they move your ass to a bad seat. But I'm going to allow the people to my right to do that work.
Yeah. Declan, what about you? Are you going to play hero?
It depends. If there's snakes on a plane, no, I am out. I don't do snakes. But
So would you suck the poison out of the little boy's
zero
arm
chance,
like
sorry,
that
kid,
flight attendant
dying.
Did?
Yeah, I think unless it's my own nephews or like I'm attached to this child, no, that kid's going to die.
By the way, was that – so they sliced his arm open and drained the poison. Yeah, then do you need to go in and suck the poison out? Wouldn't you just squeeze the poison out of the hole that you cut in his arm?
I believe it was it's Al Franken, and I've done this before. Al Franken once said he carries a baseball in his carry-on. Because he knows he couldn't, like, physically take down a terrorist, but he always said he's good at throwing a baseball. So at the very least, he would keep a baseball in his carry-on so he could at least pelt the guy to, like, injure him while then someone else maybe gets after him and is able to detain the possible hijacker. Boy. And I've actually carried a baseball in my carry-on before, I'm dead serious, for that exact reason.
How confident would you feel if Hansel Robles was carrying a baseball, and he had to hit someone in the temple to.
Yeah, it would take too long.
You want to blend in so the terrorist doesn't kill you.
Yeah, but I think I would.
You want to throw a baseball? You throw a baseball, you're dead.
I'm a very good follower. So if someone like was like saying we're going to do this, I would be one of the first people to volunteer. Like, all right, let's do it. Like I get pumped up pretty easily, and I can get riled up pretty easy. So I would be able to be like the first soldier to go with him, but I would not be the guy leading the brigade, if you will.
Sure, that's fair. Okay,
so stand.
Great leadership by Samuel L.
I'm going to back
Judd L. Jackson.
Yeah,
I'm going to the back of that plane.
Judd's grabbing all the mini booze bottles and is just going to chug as many as he can to drown his sorrows.
Yeah, I'm going
to
hang him back out there with Juliana Margulies.
Wouldn't we all love to back in 2006?
Yeah, no kidding.
Judd, what was your least favorite part of this movie?
So this is a cult classic. Like, it is a great cult film. There's no question. And you know, when you think it's serious, it gets funny. And when you think it's funny, it gets serious. But I'm going to go, and this is my problem with a lot of these films, and I'm going to go to it again. I think I've said this before about a film that I actually liked, and I like this film. Like, it served its purpose. It wasn't great, but it served its purpose. And in that context, was good. but it's the end again. The ending of these films. I mean, when you're going to write a film that is this all over the map, let's do something that is pleasantly surprising. Like Scream. Scream's great at the end, right? Because you don't know, like, you're like, okay, now I know, and now you don't know. And then, and at the end of this, when the guy gets jumped by the one surviving snake or something. And
yeah, you knew that was going to happen.
Samuel L. Jackson shoots him in the bulletproof vest, so he kills the snake. But does, like, let's find out the guy took the vest off
and
he kills
dead.
Him. And he's dead or something. like with a cult film, to me, the key to a cult film is to end it with an "Oh my God, they did that!" And like if he had blown him away and he flew out of the plane dead and he thought that he had the vest on. So the end to me, it was way too predictable.
Dude, and then we find out that Samuel L. Jackson was in on the plan to put snakes on the plane altogether. He shuts the door and takes off.
But like,
yes.
But like if you're going to do a cult film, right, that's the end.
Yeah.
So I was really disappointed that it just became at the end of it, I thought, it became sort of just an action film. And I'm like, but come on, you did a lot of cool stuff in between.
Yeah. So, yeah, Declan, your least favorite part.
There are way too many injuries below the belt in this film. I think I've said before to you guys, I would rather just have instant death than get bit down there and then never be able to use it ever again. Like, I'd rather have my head blown off than have a snake attached below the belt.
I think we saw a little frontal action on that one bathroom scene there with when the snake bit that guy.
Yeah,
we got a little. I'm gonna say a little peek,
a little peek
at the base there.
Oh, we got a glimpse. A
little glimpse there. Yeah. Okay.
I cringe at all of those. Like of all the scenes and like there's a lot of pretty disgusting, gross scenes that happen in this movie. I get so uncomfortable watching those. It makes me go crazy. There are too many injuries. There's like four or five people that get bit in intimate places in this movie, and I would rather just take a bullet to the head. And I don't like that. So that was my least favorite part of this movie.
Hmm. I actually have a few least favorite parts here. I'll go with one for sure. Maybe we can do a couple of these, but the general setting up of the snakes on the plane, okay? It almost feels like this movie was reverse engineered, like, okay, we need snakes on a plane. That would be crazy. And then at some point when you're writing the script and you're plotting this all out, well, how do we get the snakes on a plane? So let's go back to that part for a second. So you're a crime boss with a lot of pull, all right? You've got influence, you're evil, and your goal is to bring down that plane. You've got some options, all right? I'm not going to pretend to have thought much about these options myself. I just want to throw that out there. But you've got some options, right? All right, we need to take that witness out, that's basically what it is, right? We need to take that witness out. So it's not even the plane. It's like it's that witness. And you choose the path of most resistance, right? No, we're going to put a gigantic crate of hundreds of snakes in the base of that plane, cover it up with luggage so that people don't see it, make sure there's breathing holes, but they're not big enough for the snakes to get out until we release the snakes. Like, I just feel like if you're that influential as a crime boss, wouldn't there have been a path of lesser resistance to getting what you want at the end of the day than putting that giant crate of snakes in the plane? I don't know. Just felt a little far-fetched, believe it or not. I know.
A lot, like you said, he's got a lot of pull, a lot of friends.
Yeah. And then the other thing sort of related to that guy is one of my least favorite things about bad guys in these movies, and he did it at the beginning, it's the bad guy who orders everyone around what to do with unrealistic expectations, right? Like, so he splatters this guy's head all over with a baseball bat at the beginning of the movie and then tells his cronies, clean it up. We got to go, but clean it up. It's like, buddy, that's an unrealistic expectation. Like, A, you're telling us to hurry, and B, you just splatter that guy's blood all over. We have a dead body and blood everywhere, and you want us to just clean it up? Like, it's going to take some time. Or then they see the guy ride off on the – the witness rides off on the motorbike, and it's find that guy, which they did, mind you. But, again, bad guy with unrealistic expectations demanding things from his cronies is a very, very common theme throughout these action movies.
Why did the guy ride off on the motorbike when he was safely hidden in the bushes?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great call.
There's
no
reason
they didn't know he existed until he hopped on the motorbike,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah. Wouldn't you just allow the scene to unfold and for them to leave and then you hightail it out of town?
Well, we can't all be as cool, calm, and collected when witnessing murders like Judd Zulgad. Like, he might have panicked. He might have panicked with what he saw and said, I got to get out of here. It might have been a mistake by that guy.
And the other thing, too, and I might have just missed this, but, like, the crime boss, he orders these snakes on a plane, but, like, does he doesn't get, like, apprehended ever. Does he? Like, he orders them, the snakes in the plane, they obviously, you know, they get that guy in that cornfield, you know, to like, figure out all those snakes.
The snake
but
master.
Like,
yeah, snake master guy.
But what happens with the crime boss?
They go in, so they are... They're tailing him and watching him throughout the film, but they're not arresting him because they can't prove yet that he killed the prosecutor. And so that's why the Bobby Cannavale, who's the FBI chief guy at the end, then says, arrest this guy and charge him with, you know, 60 counts of murder. So like they're going to arrest him, but they don't show that part.
Which yeah.
I sort of like, because I think if we had involved the crime boss too much with the arresting stuff, we're talking 220 on this film. So I like the fact that the bad guy just sort of got swept away and we forgot about him. Because really, the bad guy was the snakes.
It's the snakes. That's, yeah. And we'll get to that, too. Least believable part here, Judd.
Well, the entire film. So, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Like, there's basically from the time it starts to the time it ends. But I guess mine would be the fact that if you were to put what eventually became a hole the size of that hole in a plane... The bad guy wins. It crashes. I don't know anyone could land a plane that by the end, the side is basically largely blown out of the plane. So like you would lose the wing. You would lose that plane would crash. But here's the thing. Least believable for this film doesn't matter. Cause like you just buy in. So it's not like, oh, it's really good. And then they screwed this film up. The whole film is not plausible.
Yeah.
So I really can't complain, but Kenan Thompson or Sully could not have landed that plane by the end.
Yeah. I'm looking up here, too, because I'm curious how cold would it have been? They were probably still like 10 or 15,000 feet off the ground when they opened all the – when they blew the windows
yes.
out, right?
Yes.
At least.
And so using standard lapse rate, temperature at 15,000 feet would be 25 degrees Celsius less than ground level. So if ground level – okay, so if ground level temp was 77 degrees Fahrenheit, it would have been 32. So we're talking L.A. We're talking, you know – so it was probably below freezing and windy
yes.
on that plane
cold
for an
hell.
Extended stretch while they were trying to land that thing.
And the scene of the flight attendants, like, holding on to seats that somehow don't come unglued from the floor, saving their lives, is absolutely hysterical.
Yeah.
Or at least believable, Dex.
Half of that. I'm not an engineer. I'm a radio producer, executive producer. But I'm pretty sure if you blew out two windows, that plane would eventually just, like, rip in half with the air pressure, with the speed. I'm pretty sure that plane would just absolutely rip in half eventually. It would just Titanic and crank open like a can.
That's probably accurate.
And the other part that's least believable, the obliviousness in airport bathrooms. So like everyone that goes into the bathroom, the couple that get it on, the guy that gets his, you know what, eaten by the snake. They're all just like so, like when you're in an airport bathroom, it's like chess, like it's. You are like you got a hand up. It's a bumpy plane. Yes. Like you are like really focusing on what you're trying to do in the bathroom. It's not like at home you've had a couple beers and it's a Friday night and you know you're not really paying attention. Like when you're in an airport bathroom, you are on hyper focus because it's an airport bleeping bathroom, and they act like it's their own bathroom on a Friday night. That's insanely least believable to me. It's insanely least believable to me.
Yeah, I think, there's a thunderstorm going on and it's turbulent and they're just, oh, let's just get in here and get it on for a while. Two things that are, I'll give you my main one here, but this is probably more of a least favorite thing. So this movie in general, with everything Declan just said about like people doing things in the bathroom, this movie triggered so much airplane anxiety in me. Like the thunderstorm and the turbulence, crying babies. You got animals. I love animals, but like you got dogs and purses and stuff. It's just like I just want to chill out in peace with just a little bit of legroom. And this movie was like not to mention the snakes, obviously. So a lot of flight anxiety here on this movie triggered. But the least believable thing for me, I've been on a lot of cross country flights. I've flown to Hawaii before and back, and I feel like I always get stuck on like the plane with no modern technology or something, right? And these guys, I mean, this wasn't like a flight to Europe or a flight to Japan or something or Australia. Like it's like a 5-hour flight, you know, back and forth from Hawaii.
Yep.
And this is the nicest, most ridiculous plane ever. It's like a double decker.
Yeah.
It's three different rows of seats. I mean, this is the most glamorous plane. I've never been on a plane like that before. And I'm just saying, like, in my world, having flown a million times and never have seen a plane like that, I've never drawn that card. It was the least believable thing to me in my consciousness.
Well, and the plane is so clearly a set. Like, there's no attempt to make the set look like a plane. It's just a set. I honestly, and I might be wrong here, I don't think post 2001, at least, we have seen double-decker planes.
I think it's too expensive to...
In the 70s, they had them.
I think they've outlawed them.
And the three-row seat things definitely exist still. I don't... In the 70s, they definitely had, like a bar upstairs, right?
Yeah.
I don't think they fly them. And I don't think they've flown them since at least 2001, if not before that.
So they were using maybe an old concept here because this was an 06 movie.
It was also a very 1970s horror type cult flick. Like it felt like it had a lot of 70s feeling as far as the premise, I thought.
Which that's a good segue into production notes if you guys are ready for these here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this movie's B-movie-esque title generated a lot of pre-release interest on the internet. This is 2006 internet, right? So this is before social media. Really, I mean, Facebook was just like a college network.
MySpace was the big thing, at least for my age it was. MySpace was the big thing.
Yep. So one journalist wrote that Snakes on a Plane is perhaps the most internet-hyped film of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, especially in the early days. No,
that was accurate. That was totally accurate. It was a big deal when I was in junior high.
Taking advantage of the internet buzz for what had been a minor film in their 2006 lineup, New Line Cinema ordered 5 days of additional shooting in early March of 2006. So shooting had wrapped up actually in September of 05. So like 6 or 7 months later, they said, all right, this thing's getting some buzz. We need to add some things in here. So reshoots normally imply problems with a film, right? Oh, we got to reshoot that. It sucks. But in this case, the producers opted to add new scenes to the film to change the rating from PG-13 to R and bring it in line with the growing fan expectations. The most notable addition was a revision of a catchphrase from the film that was parodied on the internet by fans of the film, capitalizing on Samuel L. Jackson's typically foul-mouthed and violent film persona. Enough is enough. I've had it with these mother bleeping snakes on this mother bleeping plane. That was a reshoot to capitalize on the momentum of the movie so that it lived up to the hype. More than 450 snakes were used for filming to represent 30 different species of snakes.
Really? Okay.
Mm.
So they really did. I was going to say, couldn't tell if those were, they looked real, but I couldn't tell.
I'm going to guess that the one that bit that guy's Johnson was probably a stunt snake.
Maybe.
But, yeah.
Or just well-trained.
That bit that guy's head off.
Just well-trained. Now, just bite it a little bit. Don't really bite it. Don't really lay those teeth into it.
Stop. Stop.
Don't use your teeth.
Come on, Mr. Snake on a Plane.
Oh, my God. All right. Definitive bad guy rankings.
So
the snakes are the bad guy, right?
Yeah,
the snakes?
The bad guy is a non-entity, baby. He got like $30 for the film.
Yeah. So the criteria here we're looking at are iconic. Are they how iconic? How ruthless? And then how charismatic and sort of memorable?
Charismatic.
The Terminator is number one. Hans Gruber, Michael Myers, and Clubber Lang are 2, 3, and 4. Hans Gruber from Die Hard. The Predator from Predator, Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man, Cobra Kai from Karate Kid, Mr. Joshua from Lethal Weapon, and Ivan Drago from Rocky IV round out the top 10. I got to say,
Ivan Drago seems low now in retrospect.
I agree. I agree with that.
I feel like we goofed that one up.
Mm-mm.
I think we did. I think he should be ahead of a few of these, but
I'm not.
But these are there's a lot of heavy hitters in here.
Yeah, there's some heavy. Yeah.
Can I suggest that there's a perfect place for it, these snakes? Because in fact, this film used a little bit more enhanced because it was 2006 technology. For when you were looking at what the snakes were looking at, they used
the Predator. The
Predator, exactly right. I would put the snakes right alongside that.
Would you put the – I agree, by the way. I think definitely it's, the snakes on a plane are as iconic as almost any bad guy you're going to find. Ruthless. My God. Like,
oh,
these
yeah.
snakes aren't just there to hang out and hide. Like, they're actively killing people.
Well, pheromones set them off.
So they're definitely in the top 10. I guess the question is, are they above or below the Predator? You'd have better context for, like, the iconic nature of – the Predator going back, but I almost think just based on the viral nature of snakes on a plane, early internet age, I think they're ahead of the Predator.
I'd be comfortable with them just either one is fine to me. But I just
let's
think
put them above. If we put them above, they'd be fifth. Thing. They'd be fifth. You guys have any objections with that?
No, but I do feel like at some point in time, the committee might want to go in and rectify the Ivan Drago mess up.
We might. Part of the problem is Declan has only reviewed like 75% of these.
Okay.
Because Rami and Jonathan were part of some of these.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So,
but anyway, yeah. Dex, your thoughts?
And who is snakes? So? And who he's about the Predator and who else? Just curious.
So here's the order right now. If we keep it, the Terminator, Hans Gruber from Die Hard, Michael Myers from Halloween, Clubber Lang from Rocky III, and the Snakes from Snakes on a Plane 5, just ahead of the Predator, Cyrus the Virus from Con Air, Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man, yeah. and Cobra Kai from Karate.
This is accurate. Yep, this is accurate. I'm fine with that. Okay. I like that.
Perfect. All right. Overall, 1 through 10 rating here. So this is just pure entertainment value for you. Terminator, Die Hard, and Halloween are the only three perfect 10s. Taken, John Wick, Commando, Predator, Beverly Hills Cop are all 9 or above. And then we have like 50 other movies below that. The worst movies we have reviewed to this point, as I just close out my my screen here on accident with my fat thumbs.
Come on, old man.
At the very, very bottom, Beverly Hills Cop 2 was a 1. Demolition Man, Kindergarten Cop, Shoot 'Em Up, and Bloodsport, which I take issue with, but that's okay. So how would you grade this? 1 through 10, entertainment value.
Okay, so this crossed into a genre I didn't realize fully until I watched it, which is not just an action film, but also a cult film. Like, mm-hmm. it's a definite cult film. It had a lot of problems, but you know what? It also had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And cult-wise, which I love cult films, like, those are hard to do. I'm going to land on a 9.
Wow.
I'm going to give it a very high 9 because for every purpose that we have, it basically did what we ask a film to do.
Yes.
Yeah. And crossing into cult territory, which we have not done, I don't think.
That's a good point.
Much at all until now. I'm giving it a 9.
Well, yeah. I will say that, like, action movies in general, like, there are culty. It's probably the more cultier drama because there's just an absurd amount of them. But I'm with Judd. I give it an 8. I don't give it a 9, but I give it an 8. I think it's a fun movie. It's enjoyable. I probably wouldn't, like, always want to sit down and watch it over and over again, but if it was on TV or if I flipped on HBO or something and I saw it on, like, I'm probably going to sit down and watch the rest of this movie. I love this film.
And getting Samuel L. Jackson to do this film is just it's enormous.
Yeah, I'm a Samuel L. guy. I did not love this movie nearly as much as you guys did. I just thought, I don't know, the whole thing was so, I knew what was going to, I'd never seen this, and the whole thing was just like, yep, all right, those two are going to definitely get killed in the bathroom. Like, it was, to me, it was kind of like watching just a B-level horror movie from the 80s where it's fine. Like, I didn't hate it by any means. I thought that the hype of it was definitely greater than the actual movie.
For sure.
So if you take away the hype of it and you just watch the actual movie, to me it was a 6. It was a 6. And usually I come in higher on these ratings than you guys
do. That's fine,
do.
Mr. Mm-hmm. Kildroy. So Dex and I will keep this film in our minds forever.
But that still gives it a 7.7, which is tied with Die Hard 2 and just above Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
So it's in some pretty good company there.
Different, but yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there it is. All right. I motion that I think we should stay on Action Movie Rewind here. Mm-hmm. And this one's been on the list for a long time, and it would take us back to a Sylvester Stallone classic, quote unquote, the arm wrestling action movie Over the Top. I think we should do it.
Okay.
Quickly,
what's the running time?
133. Short.
Oh, okay, yeah, Over the Top it is.
Yeah, they cut 30 minutes of extra arm wrestling scenes out to keep it under.
Hey, listen, I forgot about that.
Loggia.
2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Robert Loggia's the greatest.
Loggia.
If you want to see, I just saw him in a Charlie's Angels from like 1976 playing a bad guy. It's just great.
Look over there. It's Robert
it's
Loggia.
Robert Loggia.
Oh,
that's
as in
Loggia.
Oh my God. It's Robert Loggia.
He's great.
All right. That's a wrap. We got to go. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm Mackie and Judd. And just remember, YouTube, ScoreNorth MN YouTube, click subscribe. Purple Daily YouTube, click subscribe, where we can give you our radio faces on a daily basis. Thanks for hanging out.
Well, I know what I got to do. We're in a 200-foot aluminum tube, and we're 30,000 feet in the air. And any one of those slimy little pieces of shit can trip a circuit or a relay or a hydraulic, and this bird goes down faster than a tie hooker. So my job is to keep LAX informed on how totally screwed we are, and then find some way to keep this mother in the sky another 2 hours. Figure that out.